You are listening to Sounds Good, a podcast brought to you by Choirmate.
Hello and welcome to Sounds Good, the podcast by Choirmate, where we explore the art, the craft, and the humanity of making music. I'm your host, Dr. Jacqueline Normandy, the founder of Modern Conducting Academy, and today's conversation is one that I've been waiting a long time to have. There's a question that gets asked quite often in our field. What is a leader's real job? In particular, what's a conductor's real job? In the music world, the conductor is one of the most extreme, most visible, most unforgiving forms of leadership we have. In performances, there are no words, no edits, and no second takes. Hundreds of musicians on stage, sometimes thousands in the audience, and the whole thing rises or falls on the person at the center. When the center of this authority shifts, the entire organism shifts with it, and not always for the better. We've watched it happen. In music, a great ensemble collapses in a single year when the director changes. In business, a thriving company loses itself when the CEO leaves. Today, we are going to talk about what special qualities make a true leader and how they impact the world positively. Our guest today is Dr. Deb Confredo, the past president of the National Association for Music Education, a professor at Temple University, and a 44-year veteran music educator. Her background is in instrumental music. She's taught every level from elementary through college, conducted all states, and built a community band at Temple that brought music making to the people who otherwise wouldn't have had it. She is the co-author of A Blueprint for Strengthening the Music Teacher Profession. And right now she's leading NAFME and helping lead music educators through one of the most pivotal moments in music education that we've faced in a generation. Today, we're going to discuss creating culture and community and the human side of what a leader really does. Dr. Confredo, welcome to Sounds Good. I am so glad you're here.
Thank you, Jacqueline. It's my pleasure to be here. I'm so happy that you asked me to join you today. Looking forward to the conversation.
You're about to give a talk in Kansas City called Eclipsing the Bar Line. When you sat down to prepare it, what was the thing you most wanted conductors to walk away knowing?
Before I answer that, Jacqueline, let me go back to something that you said in your introduction about, and I'll paraphrase, how we make people feel being a leader of an ensemble. And when one leader leaves and another one comes in and that transition period and how that can impact people. And this has everything to do with what I'm going to talk about in Kansas City. I'll give you an example that I think sets the table for our conversation really well. At least it does for me. This was back in 2021 and we weren't quite done with COVID yet. And here in Louisiana, at the time, I was playing in a community ensemble here in Lafayette, Louisiana, and I know the conductor really well. And on occasion, I would guest conduct one or two pieces. And we were coming up a Memorial Day weekend. I was going to conduct one of the pieces out of an hour and a half long program. And while I wasn't conducting, I was playing saxophone. Thursday, the concert was Sunday. Thursday, I got a phone call from the conductor, and he said, "You'd be able to come to my house this afternoon or early evening." I said, "Okay, why?" And he said, "Well, I have COVID and you're going to conduct."
Oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness is right. So I went to his house late Thursday afternoon and I had Friday. But on Saturday, my husband and I had a huge party planned at our house. We had a band. We were going to have about 100 people. And so I was preparing for that. So I brought the book home, studied the best I could. The next day, I split my time between getting ready for our party and working on the music. Saturday came, and of course, there were people here all day long and into the evening. So that night, when everybody left, my husband said, "Why don't you go up to your office and do what you need to do, and I'll take care of things down here." And God bless him. I needed that time. So Sunday, we're on our way to the auditorium, and I was being very quiet, and he said, "What's your plan?" I had about a half hour with them before we started to perform. And I said, my plan is to make everybody on that stage feel like this was going to be just a lot of fun and we're going to have a great time and everything's going to be okay. You know, for me, my heart's beating out of my chest thinking, you know, I have to be really on for these folks and not let on that I was a little nervous because most of the pieces I had never conducted, I played, but I never conducted. So we had about half hour together. We did transition start stops and just made sure that everybody had their seatbelts on. And then we did the concert and it was fine. Nobody got hurt, as my husband likes to say. And it was absolutely fine. And I attribute most of that to the great preparation that Gerald Gilbo had given them in preparation for that concert. And then the rest of it to the ensemble itself for the great connection that they gave back to me. So that's kind of a long way of saying, you know, if the person in charge has already established a relationship is gone, what happens next? And how do we get those folks to sort of be together with whoever is on the podium? So that brings me to your question, you know, what do I want folks to walk away with? And the group that I'm speaking with has a range of abilities, right? From beginner, I mean, some are probably undergraduates in college, through people who have been on the podium for a long time and are working to develop more skills. And I'm going out there to do a New Horizons band camp, which is 55 and over. And when the director of bands at UMKC heard that I was coming, he asked the guy who's putting the band camp together if I would come speak to his people. So this is not my conducting web seminar. I'm just going as a special guest, I guess. Anyway, what I want them to know, there's a lot of things, but I think the main things are top of mind, that being a conductor really does transcend the notes on the page. I mean, the music is what we give away as our gift to an audience. We give each other more than that. And when I say each other, I think and you know this as a conductor yourself, the leader and the musicians and this and whatever this symbiotic relationship we create, that's what we have to focus on. And it has to do, I think, with the development of relationships, which also has to do with building of trust. Leaders in this position, we have a lot of responsibility in any position, whether you're teaching wee little ones all the way through the folks I'm going to be working with in Kansas City. I think the oldest one's in his deep in his 80s. You know, we have a responsibility to all those folks to help to fortify a path to joy, to help them to create ways where they can freely express, to develop lifelong learning, especially for the young people. Just a quick aside, my husband and I had our wedding anniversary a few days ago. We went out to dinner and the young gentleman who was waiting on us, we talked to him and we're both musicians and we like to talk when we go out. And he says, I've played piano for a long time. I don't play it much anymore, but I've played it for a long time. And the conversation eventually got around to that's something you can do forever, something you can do for the rest of your life. I think those are our primary responsibilities. The music notwithstanding, I mean, obviously that kind of goes before us. The things that I wish that people will come away from that talk with are those things. They're the less tangible things, but probably just as important as those notes on the page.
And when we do this, when conductors do this, when we put the community first, the culture first, or any leader, conductor, leader, board of directors, when they put those two first, what is the byproduct? What happens within the community? What do you think changes and shifts?
Yeah, I don't know. I might not call it a change or a shift. I might call it a growth, you know, and I'll stick to music, although I think this works, you know, also in industry. But in music, we have something special that brings us together. That's the music itself. That thing, I think, that connects us is the very thing that brought us to it in the first place, especially those of us who do it for a living, right? It's that that fire that we have inside, that thing that compels us. When I talk to high schoolers who are thinking about going into music ed, or I talk to collegiate students who are, you know, learning to do whatever it is they're going to do, composing or performing or music ed or whatever, the question I ask them is, what makes you not do this? What compels you that you absolutely, absolutely have to do this? Why can't you not do this? And inevitably, the answer that comes back is, I just have a passion for it. And that passion is something that lights people's eyes up, and it gives them this warm, fuzzy feeling. And it hooks us into memory. It hooks us into events of the past, hopeful events that are going to happen in the future. It makes us happy. Maybe when we're doing yard work or work around the house or cooking or baking or whatever, we might have music playing in the background. Maybe we're attending to it. Maybe we're singing along to it. I know I do. And that, I think that that's one of the things that in large ensembles and small ensembles too, that connects us, because we have this shared passion and we don't even have to talk about it. We just know. We sit in those rehearsals or we stand in those rehearsals and we just know that all of us are having this connected experience. It's like electricity. It moves through the ensemble. And I think that's what helps to knit us together and then keep us together, especially when things are rough, you know, when we're having a hard time to getting over that hump in one of our pieces, or maybe the director's not in a very good mood that day, or something happened at home that I can't get past. I think those are the things that really kind of push us over those difficult times.
Absolutely. In so many avenues of life, whether it's watching a sports team, going to, you know, a big arena, watching a concert, going to church or a service, things that bring us together with a unified vision, a unified action, unified emotional journey is what keeps us coming mm-hmm. back. It's what connects us as a humanity, as a community. And music mm-hmm. is so important in that. And like you said, we already have a passion and we get an automatic friend and family group. People meet their future partners. Right. They get to make music with their brothers and sisters. It's wonderful.
Yeah. And, you know, it's universal, isn't it? I mean, my husband and I, we're from the Northeast, as you and I discussed before we started recording. We moved to Louisiana in 2019. So we've been here for a while now. And almost as soon as we moved, I joined this community ensemble just for fun. And made a lot of friends. And it was also sort of this release. You know, I was still working full time and NAPMI was on the horizon and was busy. So it's hard to take out, you know, 3 hours out of my Tuesday night to do that, but I did. And it almost seemed like I was like, do I have to go? And then I got there and I was so glad that I ended up going, because it was this release and got to chat with people and enjoy each other, right? So, I mean, there's all kinds of, I'm sort of a research hound. And there's all kinds of studies that would suggest to us that making music together just makes us better. It helps us mentally, it helps us emotionally, it helps us physically. And we were missing that during COVID, even though we had the little, you know, the Brady Bunch box, you know, music, which was great. It wasn't like being in that room with everybody and singing in particular. I mean, I like my instrumental music, but singing in particular takes whatever it is that music gives us and it just amplifies it to the nth degree. It helps us with, it boosts all of our feel-good hormones. In many cases, it drops our cortisol levels. It's good medicine in the best sense of that word.
It is. It really is. Let's keep going. Every musician mm-hmm. has been in a rehearsal where the conductor clearly knows what's going on, what they're doing. And we've probably also been in ones where they don't know what they're doing. They don't have the vision. What does that feel like from the podium when you have it all together and when you don't? And what do you think it feels like when the ensemble is experiencing? What are they experiencing on the flip side? So talk to us about both sides.
Actually, this is a great question for what that story I told in the very beginning, right? And I'll go back to that story real quickly. When I got on that podium, I didn't know all those pieces as well as I would have had I rehearsed the group for 4 weeks prior to this concert. And in some cases, I was sight reading, right? And that's never that's never what you want to bring to the podium, I don't think, from my perspective. And in that case, you know, I called on my musicianship to try to get us through the things that I think were the most important hurdles in that concert, you know, I talked to you about it already, transitions, those kinds of things. So the lesson learned there for me is, and I didn't always know this, but I generally knew this, that we need to bring our best selves to the podium all the time, which means that we have to do our homework, right? And this New Horizons ensemble that I'm going to be doing in Kansas City, you know, the music isn't that hard because the people are, some of the people are just learning to play an instrument. Some haven't played in a long time and they're dusting off the instruments for, you know, after several years. Some play really well. So it's this, you know, really huge range of abilities. So the music that I chose had to sort of be middling, right? So not beginner, beginner, but not college level either. It's somewhere in the middle. For conductors who've done this a lot, doesn't take long to prepare those pieces. And the mistake I think some of us make is not preparing them because we say, oh, no, it's easy. Well, I can tell you without any exaggeration, I spent several hours preparing each of those little grade two and a half on a scale of 1 to 6 pieces so that I can do just that. I can bring my best self to the podium. What that helps us to do is to help to anticipate difficulties, right? So I can plan, I can have a plan A, B, C, D, E for what works and what might not work. Dear friend of mine used to say that's if you plan 5 what ifs and then what, then you've done your homework, right? So if I do this and this happens, then I should go to this plan. So you always have this backup, but the only way you can do that is if you have a really good handle on the content. So if you don't have the content, or if you're not sort of expert at it, if you had enough practice at it, everything else goes away. So you have to concentrate on that. And if that's what you bring to the podium, where's the focus? The focus is on you, yourself, rather than those kids or those adults or whoever is in front of you trying to learn from you. If we are expert, we're as much of an expert as we possibly can be when we come to the podium, then we're free to be creative, we're free to listen, we're free to ask questions, we're free to do all these things and be proactive, right? So I think I'm getting far afield. So if you do have it, I think you kind of know it, and there's a relaxation that you bring to the podium. And the relaxation doesn't mean that you're lax, but it means that you've got confidence in the knowledge of the content such that you can shape and watch and listen and help people who might be struggling. Whereas if you don't have that, those things may escape you. And ultimately, your constituents' experience suffers for it if we don't bring our best self to the podium. Yeah.
Absolutely. We've watched great ensembles collapse in a single year when the director changes. We've watched companies that do the same when the CEO leaves. The person at the center holds something invisible that holds the whole organism together, and it depends on it. What do you think that thing is?
Yeah, it's a magic pill. No, I don't think it's. I don't think there's any one thing. I think that for most conductors who really are teachers, there's this innate ability that we have, but that doesn't mean it can't be taught. I think that there's a, you know, it's sort of that nature-nurture connection, right? There are people who are just naturally good teachers, and there are people who learn really well, but most of us are sort of somewhere in the middle, I think. But going back to what I just started saying, I don't think there's any one thing. The person at the center, in my opinion, shouldn't be the culture. The person at the center needs to be the person who nurtures the culture, right? And when I say culture, you know, from a choir perspective, there is a culture that surrounds being in a choir, being a member of a choir, that identity that we have. There is a culture that surrounds being an orchestra member, surrounds being a band member, fill in the blank. And we are proud of that. I've been going back and forth on email the past few days with some high school friends of mine, most of whom were in band with me. I was a kid. And our 50th, I hate to even say that, our 50th high school reunion is this year. Nobody wants to go to it. They all want to go to a band reunion. So we're trying to put together a band thing. And I think it goes back to what we started out with. And that is that's that culture of friendship, of understanding, of passion that we all not only had, but continue to have. So that person at the center, the CEO, the leader, the conductor, whoever is the quote unquote the boss, right? If that person is the culture, when that person leaves, the culture will be broken. But if that's the person who nurtures the culture, so in other words, we move from mine to ours, then I think we lay the groundwork for expectations. Should another person come into that spot, right? That person can demonstrate through modeling a caring environment. when we do that, if that person moves to another position, another person comes in, the new person is received positively, and that helps with their success. That person's successful, then the ensemble will be successful as well. And going back to what I just said, it has to do with reminding the ensemble, this is not mine, but it's ours. And that new leader, the new person coming in order for that culture to be not just retained, but fortified and developed within with that new person, then that new person can be embraced into the fold. To put another way, I think everybody's got a responsibility to support a change, to facilitate that next chapter, is not just that being a bad one, just the next one. And the next one that happens in a natural sense, because change is natural. We don't like it all the time because we get comfy in where we are.
Yes, 100%. Bruce Rockwell did a masterclass on student leadership with the Modern Conducting Academy. And he implements this better than anybody I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, I want to be in his choir because it sounds so fun. The leadership that he has developed in every ensemble, there are multiple leaders. They're in charge of activities. They're in charge of everything. And it's not his to take on. And therefore, if he ever leaves or he's sick or on a trip, they know exactly what to do. It is ours. Right. It is there, you know, it is a team effort. And I think that's one reason why so many leaders fail or have that really rough transition, is that the old past leader leaves and nobody knows what to do because they had their hands in everything so tightly. Yeah, it's so important.
Yeah, it reminds me of this is a piece of advice that I was given decades ago, and that is, don't keep the secrets to yourself because they're not secrets. Share them. And that goes back to what you and I talked about a little bit ago, and that has to do with building relationships and the development of trust, right? If my constituents, my musicians, don't feel that I trust them, then how can we be vulnerable with each other when we're performing? And you know this even better, I think, than instrumentalists do, because in choral music, the messages are much more overt because we have text, right? And in lots of cases, the vulnerability that the text allows in choral settings is just overwhelming sometimes. And if we don't have that trust relationship, that can fall really flat, figuratively and literally. So yeah, the development of a culture and a community within the ensemble that is built on trust is one that won't crumble once that leader moves away and into another position.
The things that we learn in ensembles are the same things that we need to learn to be in a cohesive family, a big family, in an employee and a company, a community member, where it's not enough to just tell somebody to go do something. We have to mold them and tell them how to do it, and then be gentle when they're in the learning process. You know, when you have kids and you're teaching them to do chores, go wash the dishes. You know, well, what does that mean? So you do it, you bring them in, you do little things, you help them, you give them one task, but it's delegation with guidance. And that is what builds great individuals that enjoy and have awareness of how it fits in with the collective. It's right. Music ensemble making creates better humans.
Amen. 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 Absolutely. It is the essence of humanity. It truly is the essence of humanity. I couldn't agree with you more. And you're speaking like you have children.
I don't, but I've helped raise many, you know, lots of friends have them and good. Teaching different ages. Yeah.
Yep. I love children. So, yeah.
People dig on, you know, dig on children and, you know, they're loud and wild sometimes, but they are, in my opinion, what we need to protect the most because they're the future. Yeah. Every adult that you see that you don't like what they do, it's because it started in childhood. And so it's the collective. It takes a village mentality to raise people.
Yeah, right. That's absolutely right. And from a teacher's standpoint, as you're speaking, absolutely. And going back to the responsibilities of the ensemble, it's, and this goes back to your takes a village piece, it's everyone's responsibility. So if there's somebody standing or sitting next to me and they're having difficulties, how can I help? How can that ensemble member help? I won't know if I'm allowed to help until my conductor, a director, not only gives me permission, but teaches me how to do that. So we're teaching musicians, we're teaching teachers, we're teaching humans for sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. For people who are listening today, and if they're not a conductor, let's say they're a manager, a parent, a teacher, a coach, what's the one thing from the podium you'd want them to carry into their work tomorrow?
That's a great question. That's just a great question. And you know, you might have heard this too. I've heard this a number of times, that there are business leaders who often look to musical leaders to get ideas about how to do their jobs better. I'm just always very intrigued by that. I would say that people, you musicians, are not tools for our own aggrandizement.
Yes.
They're not.
Yes. Thank you. Applause. Say it louder in the back.
Yeah. Right. And they're human beings, and they have a passion, and they are gracing all of us with their time and their talent. Whenever I guest conduct, one of the last things and it's especially true when I'm doing this with children, I will remind them before we begin performing that this is a gift that you are giving all the people who are going to be listening to you today. You are giving them a gift. So we take ourselves out of it, right? I would also say that we need to see the passion in the people before us, right? If people aren't musicians and they don't do what we do, I would say this is sort of a universal tenet, that we need to see passion in the people we lead and foster its growth. Passion comes honestly, and when the going gets rough, sometimes passion gets a little tarnished. And so good leaders will help to continue fostering that growth. And I'm going to go back to something I shared earlier, and that is that I think the leaders who have good grasp of their content in whatever area you're in, whether it's music or otherwise, those folks are free to be creative, they're free to be flexible, they're free to be spontaneous. And when you have creativity, flexibility, and spontaneity in the mix, in things that are often very difficult to do, that can lead to greater happiness and confidence in the people we are privileged to lead. So, So know the notes, you know what's in front of us so that we can go on to, the fun stuff. Not the music isn't the fun stuff.
Oh, I was just going to say, you hit on something so poignant. So much so that I wrote a book about it, The Mindful Musician, Finding a Healthy Balance. It's about when I realized, when I stepped away from the classroom for a little while, that I was using my musicians to validate my own self-worth. And how many times do we read on a social media blog, I just am not getting the musical fulfillment. And it's an elementary teacher or middle school teacher's, social media group. And I'm like, you're asking 11-year-olds to fulfill you as an adult musically. No, right. No, no.
Right.
Go join an adult ensemble. Start your own. Make solo music. You shouldn't be giving, all this overly complicated thing that's ruining the passion and the joy for your adult satisfaction.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you hope against hope that those folks will get there someday. That they'll realize that. Maybe they'll read your book. I hope and I will too.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, if there's one idea you hope that listeners walk away with from this conversation, Deb, what would that be?
I would say to share the joy. Just share the joy. It's in my travels when I was NAPI president, I had the great privilege of going to lots and lots and lots of state conferences, state music educator conferences. And I would, I got to do lots of speaking, but I also took the opportunity to watch other people work, including people who were hired to do, the all-state ensembles and bands and orchestras and choirs who were getting ready to perform for the state teachers. And it inevitably just gave me ear-to-ear grin to see these people at work preparing for a big thing, right? The state concert, that state conference, that's a big deal. knowing that it was probably, there is probably very challenging moment for those teachers, yet they do it with such joy and such effusive joy, and it's catching, right? I've also seen conductors who are angry and blame everything on the people in front of them, and they rule by fear. And when I was teaching undergraduates how to be good conductors, I would ask them, whose room do you want to be in? You want to be in the one where the person in front of you is just effusive with joy, or the person who's angry? And, you know, there's just one answer to that question. So I think that would be the takeaway. Good leaders know that the passion and the joyfulness of music got them there, and we just can't keep it to ourselves. We have to give it away.
Beautiful. Dr. Confredo, thank you so much for this conversation, for your honesty, your wisdom, and for the work you do on behalf of every music educator in this country. What I hope listeners hear today is this: a leader's real job is building people. And whether you're standing in front of an ensemble, a classroom, a boardroom, or a family, the work is the same. And the person at the center matters most of all, because they hold the invisible thing that makes everything else possible. To everyone listening, the people you lead are watching what you build. And what you build is what they'll carry into every room they enter for the rest of their lives. If this conversation resonated with you, please share it with someone who builds people for a living. This has been Sounds Good. I'm Dr. Jacqueline Normandy, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you, Jacqueline.
You have heard Sounds Good, a podcast brought to you by ChoirMate.